Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. When you hear the term, the Black Church in America, what comes to mind? Most likely, it isn't just a picture of people who share the same racial identity gathering to worship. Most of us envision a powerful multi-denominational movement that gave solace to slaves, worked for emancipation, and has continued to provide a soul-strengthening armor for a community that, as a whole, has yet to fully realize the American dream. When we think of Black clergy who have had great influence on the social justice movement, Martin Luther King most often comes to mind. But there were so many more who offered leadership and dedication to this great mission. Today we have on our show someone who can offer profound insights into this uniquely American tradition. The Reverend Dr. Kenyatta Gilbert is Associate Professor of Homiletics at Howard University. He earned his BA in Political Science from Baylor University and both his Master's of Divinity and PhD in Practical Theology from Princeton. Dr. Gilbert specializes in the history, theory, and practice of African-American preaching. His research focuses on the theology and rhetoric of prophetic preaching, African-American religion, hermeneutical theory, and constructive practical theology. He is the author of The Journey and Promise of African-American Preaching, A Pursued Justice, Black Preaching from the Great Migration to Civil Rights, and Exodus Preaching, his latest book. Dr. Gilbert is an ordained Baptist minister and founder of The Preaching Project, Restoring Communities Through Spoken Word, a website that nurtures the preaching life of ministers serving African-American churches and communities. He has served congregations in Maryland, Texas, New York, New Jersey, and Kenya. So we welcome to Common Threads, Dr. Kenyatta R. Gilbert. Hello, Kenyatta.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. My first question doesn't have to do with preaching per se, but it's something that has always fascinated me, and that is how Africans adopted Christianity as their religion. And I'm wondering if you can shed any light. It seems to me that the conversion from either Islam or the animistic religions of Africa, that conversion took place rather speedily. And it always fascinates me how the people who were brought in against their will from their native lands would take so quickly to this the religion of their overlords, of the people who whipped them, who treated them so horribly. And so my question is, am I correct in understanding that it was a fairly quick process? And what do you think was really, what were the points that really pulled them into Christianity?
Excellent question. To think about the historical origins of African-American Christian practice, I think one has to start, as you mentioned, with African culture and American slavery. One thing that I believe is critical to understand is that African-American cultural communication is connected to this idea that there was a collision of worlds here. And so when the African, enslaved African, was brought to these shores, one had to also keep in mind that the Anglican Church made the first or the initial attempts to missionize and evangelize the African. However, they were unsuccessful in doing so, largely because of the massive amount of illiterate Africans. And so Africans did not resonate with the more staid and contemplative tradition of the Anglicans, specifically the missionary work of the society, of the propagation of the gospel to the heathens. Believe it or not, that's such a loaded term for this missionary movement. But again, to tie the crown to this idea of missionizing the heathen, quote unquote, really suggests to me that a person thought either that the African came here or was a blank slate, but to the contrary, Africans had a tremendous understanding of the sacred. And for them, there was a collision of worlds in the sense that the overtaxing educational credentials that would have been placed upon them for conversion, for example, just didn't take. And so during the Great Awakening period, the Great Awakenings, this revivalistic, livelier form of religious expression was more in sync with their religious sensibilities. And so Baptists and Methodists of the evangelical stripe saw that that there was resonance here, and so they enjoyed the largest influx of Africans to the tradition or the movement of evangelicalism.
Can we assume that the slave masters believed that the Africans had souls? I mean, here you, back a couple of hundred years ago, an African-American was three-fifths of a human being, but right. But there was this attempt to Christianize them. So clearly, however one looked upon an African as a lesser being, we can assume that they still believed that they had souls and could be saved, correct?
Yes, I believe that's correct. However, the slaveholders also had an understanding that the human person was totally depraved. And so in that sense, not seeing the African as a person created in the image of God also meant that their bodies were in some ways sinful, whereas the soul could be redeemed. And so the dichotomization of body and soul, this dualism, has in fact been a part of the disconnect between Black religion and white Christianity.
I often wonder if the slaveholders believed that heaven would be segregated, that they would they'd be living in the big house. were there rewards for converting or punishment for not converting that you're aware of?
Yeah, you know, I think if one would listen to some of the early sermons to missionize the slaves, there was one particular sermon that is recorded by Albert Rabiteau, who penned the book Slave Religion, where it suggested that if slaves obeyed their masters, then they would have a ticket to eternal reward. But again, it was conditioned upon this understanding that freedom on this side of death came with restrictions that were not necessarily or would not necessarily be placed upon them in the afterlife.
Black preachers were very important in slave society, and you write that they were seers interpreting the importance of events.
That's right.
So you're indicating that there were preachers, ministers of the gospel, who were simultaneously slaves
Yes, but they were largely illiterate. And so they were exhorters. They were in touch with the divine in the sense that their own personal magnetism and eloquence in some way superseded this the literacy requirement or their obligation to become learned in that sense. There was this kind of intangible way of connecting one's spirituality that defied rationalism, which is largely tied to literary traditions.
So these people that you talk about, they weren't necessarily ordained by a denomination. They were simply spirit-filled, perhaps.
That's partially true. I think by and large, they were not ordained to any specific institutional structure. But if one sees ordination through the lens of kind of answering a particular call to ministry, then one would I believe say that that person is ordained or set apart or consecrated to a work of service to God in the world. Now, in the sense of kind of formal credentialing, as early as the late 1700s, you found African churches. Quiet has kept those persons, whether considered jackleg preachers, unofficial preachers, they were ultimately, I think, given license to exhort and preach under white supervision. And that in and of itself brought a certain amount of credentialing to the work itself that the African assumed.
Ah. Any idea if they were able to legitimize marriages?
You know, I think that would have been a barrier in the sense that slaves were property. And many of the distressing effects that we see today relative to broken family systems has a great bit to do with the tradition of separating families. And so unofficially, in the slave era, I would say that no written contract per se would have given authorization to one's legal status as married, but that did not preclude Africans from jumping the broom, if you will, which is a cultural tradition that was a ritual in which the slave brought visibility to a consummated union.
Hmm. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Common Threads on WGBU. I'm Fred Stella, and my guest today is the Reverend Dr. Kenyatta Gilbert, Associate Professor of Homiletics at Howard University. And we're talking about the Black prophetic experience. Speaking of which, you say that Black preaching is three-dimensional, priestly, yeah, prophetic, and sage. So I want you to explain all of those, but before that, do you think this is exclusive to African Americans? Shouldn't all preaching be three-dimensional, priestly, prophetic, and sage?
I would agree with that, but I would not say that it's exclusive. I would say that the best of it that we have evidence that has been evidenced and witnessed on these shores is kind of an integrated speech of justice recovery and hope. And so as I have discerned this in my own scholarship, I call this trivocal preaching, which is essentially, as a working definition is, it is a ministry of Christian proclamation about God's intent for God's human creation that has to do with divine intentionality, recovery, communal care, and the active practice of hope that finds its resources connected to Black life in the North American context. Now, that's not exclusivist in the sense, but it's culturally particular. And I think that there is something to be learned from this tradition, from other traditions, in the sense that when one can see this interconnection, one might also probe their own tradition and see those interconnections. But I tie my scholarship, Fred, to Luke chapter 4, 16 through 21, which is the picture of Jesus's inaugural vision, where Jesus is handed the scroll in the synagogue, and he recites the passage in Isaiah, you know, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, for he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor, recovery of sight to the blind, and to let the oppressed go free. And so that tri-dimensional dynamic, in my judgment, is the substance of what it means to preach in the Jesus tradition.
So speak specifically to these three attributes. What does it mean to preach priestly?
For one to preach priestly, one has to think about the sacramental nature of preaching and how the preacher is the community intercessor, that preacher has been consecrated to a work and that has been blessed by the community to pray for the people, to be concerned about their spiritual care, to think about the maintenance of the institutional church, to care for the soul. And so the preaching that is more or less aligned with personal salvation, conversion to faith, abstention from the vices of sin, all of these kind of tie into what I would regard as the priestly dimension of preaching. Now, the prophetic dimension, which is largely the focus of the article that you cited, has to do with tying justice to hope. And I think that when one speaks out against injustice, there is this sense that God is concerned about our humanity and how we are treated as God's created beings. And this notion of kind of social criticism, when we see that someone is being treated unjustly, that should trigger something in us as covenant people, that God does judge sin, both individualistic individualistic or personal sense, but also God judges these systems that perpetrate injustice against the least of these in our society. And finally, the safety dimension, which I think is more unique to African-American or African sensibility, is this notion of a communal heritage where the preacher acts in the role of wisdom teacher. And, of course, if one would think about the threefold office of Christ, you know, you have a prophet, priest, and king. But Jesus was also a rabbi, was a teacher. And so I see this sage tradition when one thinks about the preacher as a person who is educating the community, tying together wisdom from the symbols and the symbols and signs of the sacred and the value of community, one can get a more, I think, can get a more robust picture of the theology of preaching.
You, we talked just a couple of minutes ago about the Great Awakening in the early 19th century, and one might assume that a powerful religious revival, such as the Great Awakening, might tip the scales on how people treat each other, and perhaps would have affected the anti-slavery movement in a very positive way. But I'm gathering that it didn't really. You say that the Great Awakening was very helpful in bringing African Americans into the church, but in terms of what it did to the majority white population, am I to believe that it didn't do much to change their attitudes towards slavery?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think when you deconstruct it, initially during the revival period, there was a strong egalitarian impulse or thrust in the awakenings, such that blacks were free to worship just as whites, largely, you know, connected to those in Appalachia, for example, where in Cane Ridge, where the revivals kind of sparked. So initially, there was this freedom, irrespective of race. However, over the issue of slavery, there was a significant retreat from the early tenets of soul salvation and the liberty that evangelicalism professed.
Why were educational restrictions lessened on preachers? Did white society see a value in that? I understand that for most slaves, literacy could get you killed.
This is true. This is true. To miseducate and to keep people or render people to a state of oppression requires that there be what I would call an esoteric or secretive kind of a platform where some are in the know and others are marginalized or in the out group. And so the in slave society, you were able to kind of perpetuate the injustice of slavery by declaring who is in the in-group and who's in the out-group. And educationally speaking, the persons who were able to rule, they were the first formers of educational institutions. And if one were to probe and trace some of the colleges, even the universities that we revere today, many of them found their rooting in not in a kind of a democratic process, but by the shoring up of power by the ruling elite or the aristocracy, which again included some and excluded the masses or many others.
Mm. Dr. Gilbert, we are down to the wire for this edition of Common Threads, but before we leave, if you could quickly tell us about that website, the Preaching Project, Restoring Communities Through Spoken Word. Could you give us that that site, please?
Sure. So the preachingproject.org was a Christ-centered vision for me to kind of help African-American, well, not simply African Americans, but those who are dedicated to the promotion of community wellness of African American churches and communities. And so what I wanted to do and what I am doing is kind of developing a platform for theological engagement between scholars as well as working clergy. Oh. Now, the problem... Oh,
I'm sorry. What we should probably do, because we are running out of time, I think that would be an excellent subject to dive into next week, and I'm hoping you'll join us then.
I certainly will.
Wonderful.
I look forward to the conversation.
You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU. I'm Fred Stella, and with me today is Dr. Kenyatta R. Gilbert. We've been speaking about the Black prophetic experience. Please join us again next week when we continue our conversation here on WGVU-FM.